This episode of The Sapient is brought to you by AI Digitales. AI Digitales is all about making AI fun and accessible. In today's episode, we will dive deep into understanding how AI is being introduced to kids, helping them become the innovators of tomorrow. So let's dive in.
Namaste and welcome back to another episode of The Sapient. And today we have a doctor. I mean, she's one of the first doctors that we have had. So welcome, Taylor. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic today and I'm delighted to be here with you, Ganesh, and to speak to your audience today about a very important subject.
Yes. And yeah, usually I do a little, you know, brief introduction of what a person does. I was really confused with yours. Yeah. Like, you do so many things. Like, I would spend like 4 minutes just introducing you, right? I mean, you are one of those people who would say, yeah, I did that on almost everything.
Yeah, I think that, and lots of people say what you said, so you're absolutely right. People have said that to me. And I always refer to a conversation I had with Sir Tim Berners-Lee, who invented the World Wide Web back in 2009. And he said, I asked him, I said, what do you say when people say, what do? You do everything. And he said, no, I help other people do everything. And so mine is my science that I've created is around connecting our world. Tim's science was introducing our world to its own truth. Mine is the science and the engineering to connect our world such that humans can create or understand their own truth. Because technology is not an end itself. Or if it is, that's the dystopian future you're all worried about.
Yep.
It's actually a means to an end. It's an enabler. And so what does it do for us? I mean, yes, of course, technology is my superpower, so I love it. But only because what it does for us, not of itself. It's not an outcome. Not my view, anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I would like to talk about AI because that's the current hot topic, right? I read a meme the other day that said, if you have a startup, just add the word AI and you would get valuation of more than $1 million.
Yeah, I'm an investor, so I can tell you we've got wise to that. You need to improve on that one, Ganesh.
Yeah.
Because that may have been true back in 2023, but not today.
Not now, yes.
Add a little bit more value than that if you want investors' money.
Yeah. But also... it is funny, right? Because you come from a very technological, you know, techie brain. And you must be seeing this loads that, you know, people are, even if it's a machine learning algorithm, they're like, yeah, this is AI.
Yes.
Right.
No, so I've actually been 40 years in IT. I trained as an aerospace engineer. And my dissertation was about looking at the aircraft industry and solving the noise pollution it creates across our cities, because that affects our populations. I didn't know then that that was called societal concerns across an industry. So I was part of the first engineering team that looked at the outcomes the aircraft industry was creating for us all as a society. And that thread has followed all the way through. But I never got to be an aerospace engineer because the aircraft we built was bought by Saudi Arabia, and the idea of a woman being in charge was absolutely unacceptable. That hasn't a good ending. We may get to that today, we may not. But what I did because of that and the IT career that I effectively had for, 4 years, and then I set my own company up because I understood that everybody was looking in the wrong direction and looking at the wrong things. And I've been unemployable ever since. So that's 40 years of being unemployable because I've done it my own way. And that has always been around what is that outcome the technology's creating? Is that good for our society or not? If not, how can it be improved? And so 29 years ago, I started a research group journey around the idea that the deep technology that we were building all that way back, deep technology is a term where it's where engineering and innovation meet. And so AI is one of the technologies in deep tech. But I was very concerned that actually this world we were going to build, you know, it was in my world, it was in my research space, was actually going to be not for our benefit. That wasn't going to be the outcome. It was going to be to our detriment. And we were going to sleepwalk our way into this. So I thought there's only one way to understand whether that's true or not. And so research it. So that's what I did. And this is called, what I'm talking about today is called the industrial Internet of Things, of which AI is a part, but it's only one part of it. And essentially what it does is disconnect us from any input to whatever outcome we've created. So you don't get in the middle of it. A robot decides, an AI decides, some sort of device or sensor decides, but there's no human, what's called no human in the loop. That's what I consider to be a dystopian future. However, you can put, you know, requirements on all of this. You can navigate this differently. So we decide. So what gets done, we decide. The machines may well do it, but then we overall decide what that, what's actually done with that. And essentially, that's what that 25 years of research in deep tech is. And I'm an international web scientist. So all of the technology I'm talking about, it can be deployed as a SaaS model. Of course, it can. It can be deployed on a platform. Of course, you see it. But ours is deployed at the internet itself, the underlying engineering. So it's a different prospect.
Got it.
And one of the things that I did was I had a cohort of young men, as it turned out at the time, who were 8 years old. And I started to understand for their needs, because they are, they learn differently, they're they were neurodiverse. What does it mean to them? Because I'm visually disabled and I'm also neurodiverse. I'm a dyslexic thinker. That's my superpower. And if any of you are listening today, what's your superpower if you're neurodiverse? And so it was understanding what people needed of this technology. So that's a very different prospect. And so far, over half the world's population has benefited from that research by understanding how to navigate this differently.
Got it. I feel like, doctor, since you're a doctor, you dragged it to a very technical level.
Absolutely.
That my chimp brain cannot handle. So let me ask you a far simpler question, right? And this is something that is a very turning point both in ethics and in technology, right? Because there is this whole camp or, you know, tribe of people who say that the AI, the whole AI technology and the trend itself has to be decentralized, right?
I do.
Because it can act as, you know, I don't want to, you know, describe what it would be. And there is whole another camp which says, you know, what if we make sure that it is centralized, you know, we can therefore regulate it and we can have more control over it. But other you know, side is like, you know, look at open source. So it has to be more open source and, you know, more transparent. So whose side do you think you are on and why?
None of them. Because my alternative is different. It will have to be decentralized because our whole world is being decentralized with the industrial Internet of Things. There is no central point of control, which is really interesting because Sir Tim Berners-Lee built the World Wide Web for that, that decentralized world. Because we should be able to choose at our local level how it works for us or in our country or in our region or across a continent, because it shouldn't be in under central control. But the reality of it is the engineering doesn't work like that. So ultimately, industrial Internet of Things is a decentralized world. So that's, given that that's a reality, then it's a question of what do you do? Now, open source is a really good question. Anybody that's known me and seen me speak knows I'm a huge advocate of it. But 2.5 years ago, I started work in Ukraine, and we have never had a global cyber war before, but we have one now. And so the vulnerabilities of that open source model means that we haven't been able to use it as it stands today. So as you know, open source, that's not how we need to deploy it. Because not because it's decentralized, but because it's vulnerable. And because you can't, in war, you have to be able to be responsive in the moment. So lots of what we do for our open source, we planned. We obviously have the projects, you know, I particularly work in the Apache Foundation. And so we do what we do. this is a situation where adversarial AI has been deployed from day one. And so you can't, you know, use those models. You need to look at. So we do things that I would call hardening that, that anything that looks to attack it doesn't understand what it is. That isn't always done on soil. That might be done off planet. Depends what it is, really. But the reality of it is all of the models you mentioned do not fit for the industrial Internet of Things. They all have to be evolved. And the technology we have in Ukraine today has made that evolution. And so we once the war is over and they're able to rebuild, we'll be talking about a decentralized nation that is sustainable, because the dark side of this is not just the tech, it's the cost to the planet of deploying that tech.
Yeah.
Because it's not a sustainable technology at the moment.
Yeah. So would you say it's not sustainable because of its demand in terms of resources, or would you say it is because it's just not evolved far enough?
It's because this has been rushed to market. No thanks, you know, from my point of view, no thanks to OpenAI, what they've done. And for most of us that have been building responsible AI for many, many years, that was not a good day for our industry.
Yeah.
And as a result of the adoption of it and the scramble to use it, when really what we're talking about here, there are four main types of artificial intelligence. These are just reactive machines. Like you say, lots of it's not AI at all. It's actually machine learning. And some of it's quite simple algorithms. Let's be honest, it's not what we're talking about. But it's being badged like that. How do you tell? Well, unless you know the tech itself, you can't tell. And, you know, part of the regulation is to be able to get a handle on companies that are misusing those labels. But they've got no, the AI that's out there now, you know, apart from one, has no memory. It's task specific. It gives you gibberish because it's been trained on gibberish.
Yeah.
So if gibberish is what you want to put into your business, then go ahead. That's what it's for. But, you know, the same input always delivers the same output. So most of the models we've got out there are, you know, the nursery step 101 in my world of AI. And there are some limited memory machines, but, you know, we're not going to get into the specifics of the tech. But what the world is all seeing now is not what we've been building for 25 years. We've been building what we call theory of mind AI, where it actually has some intelligence and helps inform it, and then effectively will give us a new perspective on what we already know. But most of anything across the world is not that. And so I think we've got to be really clear about what it is we're engaging with, because you said it already, there's an ethical piece to this.
Yep.
Just because you can, should you?
Yeah.
And if you do, do you know what you've done? How can you tell if you don't have a responsible AI approach and don't work with those 10 principles of how you build? How do you know what you've actually done and what the impact of that's going to be? You don't. It's a black box to you. And so I think that, you know, the reality of what we're discussing now is, I mean, I don't like the phrase, but an arms race of what the sharing economy has created back in 2009, while I sat with Sir Tim Berners-Lee, we talked about the sharing economy. Only 18% of the world was online. This conversation couldn't have taken place. Although most of us were working in this, but it couldn't have taken place because it was very limited in the hands of those that build, like myself. But what we talked about there was, how do we scale that across the web itself? How do we make that available? And if we do that, what are the principles we use to do it? But today, what we're dealing with in AI and in this conversation is an AI that actually has got no guardrails. You've got no insight as to how it's been trained. You don't know what data it's using. And in some cases, a lot of my companies I work with as clients in the creative sector have effectively had their IP destroyed, you know, their intellectual property, because it's literally just been feeding in from across the world on what we don't know. And I mean, you only have to look at some of the social platforms and you can put a fairly sensible, reasonable comment on, and the trolling you get. Well, actually, now we've got some of the AI prompt machines. You can be better trolled by AI than you can on Twitter these days because of what it's been fed on. You know, so I think the reality of it is we have to understand what we're dealing with and know that there's an ethical piece. There's also a moral piece to this.
Yep. A big one.
A very big one.
Yeah.
And without the 10 responsible AI principles, quite frankly, even if what I see for a future is, even if you haven't built it, maybe what you've done is taken somebody's and built around it.
Yeah.
Maybe you're just consuming it. But what are you doing with that AI model?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're the end of the value chain, so it's your business, you consume it into your business. I mean, arguably that's, you know, providing you paid for it, arguably that's fine. But are you then pushing that onto customers? And
yes.
What's it doing for them? So that whole value chain, you're right, Ganesh. Yes. That whole value chain is in everybody's hands now.
Mm-hmm.
And really, one of the things, Tim did a talk in London, probably 2018. And somebody said to him, do you regret creating the World Wide Web? And I sort of looked at him and he looked at me and he said, regret it? Why would I regret it?
Yeah.
All the bad things that are done on the web.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, well, the web's the web's quite a neutral resource. It's humans that make the bad things and the good things. So I think that's true with AI. You know, at the end of the day, it displays our humanity based on the products we produce, the AI products we produce, or the ones we're consuming.
But also the gentleman should have just questioned him, where do you work? You know. Right.
Like yes, that, I know what you mean.
That would shamble the ego chambers of people so quickly.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, this is a conversation that has a lot of nuances, right?
Like it does.
It has a lot of essence in a very wide spectrum. What do you think in terms of AI as a future? And I'm very comprehensive thinking about when I'm asking this, because a lot of people see AI replacing people, right? As you said, people are, it's destroying people's IP or, just a workflow. But also what I'm seeing, since I'm a digital marketer, is more and more agencies and companies using AI, right, to do the creative work, unfortunately, right? So you could talk about Llama or any open AI model which generates images, and that's how they're designing ad creatives, right, which are fed to regular human beings, and they do not know they might not know the difference between a real image and an AI created image. So what do you think in terms of future? Because we are adults talking about this, but there is a whole generation of kids that are growing up in an ecosystem of AIs, right? Because in today's world, there is AI for almost everything, right?
Yeah.
There is, so what do you think in terms of future? Like, what does it mean for the younger kids?
So it's a really interesting question, because that's been the crux of my research in terms of what's the societal impact of a technology like AI or the metaverse or some sort of Internet of Things array or something like that. These are all connected. They all have the same sort of possibility of dystopia or utopia. It's how we use it, how we build it, what we're doing with it that matters. And so we're having this conversation about AI, but we could equally have this conversation about the metaverse.
Yeah.
The interesting thing is my research focused on our requirements, the citizen, the human at the heart of what we do. So I'm interested in us. And as I said at the very beginning, the technology is not the outcome. It's what we do with it that matters. And I started that research with Generation Z, who are 31 and under today, when they were 8.
Mm-hmm.
Why 8? Because in mostly across the world, by the time they're beyond 7, they're starting to find their place in the world, their question in the world. And Gen Z are very much the curiosity generation. They are web entrepreneurs. They've gone, well, this is the most stupid way I've ever seen of doing this. I'm going to do it this way. And they bring real value there. And mainly they have different values to the cohort they inherited from, which is Generation Y, the millennials, different values, but also different capabilities with tech. So Gen Z were the first generation that it was around them. They didn't adopt it. It was their world. Now, obviously, we've gone on from that. But the today, right here today, over 40% of the world's GDP is influenced by them. So you might still think that, you know, in your sort of domain, in the marketing side of things, what's going on in marketing, what's required, what is the differentiator, how can you bring value to clients is changing. Yep. But they're changing it because of how they do things and what they do. Yes. You take that down to the next generation, Gen Alpha, who are 20 and under today, and they are the generation that came into our workforce during a pandemic.
Yeah.
So they've had a completely different view of all of this. And they are very much not, that's a world. They've grown up like this. They know it. It's how they work.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I had in pandemic emeritus professors, because I'm a professor in many, many disciplines, but emeritus professors ringing me up saying, help, what do we do with this generation? And it's like, well, you facilitate them. You get out of the way because you've got the equivalent of a steamroller in front of you. Help them do what they want to do. You're not the authority anymore. You're a co-designer. Yeah. And, you know, many of my emeritus professor friends, they resigned at that point. They're like, no, that's not how education works. Oh, it is, because they're very comfortable with it all. And then I take Gen Beta, which I'll just tell you about briefly. So Gen Beta are 9 and under. My youngest entrepreneur is 3 years old. He is an authority in his own way on the High Seas Treaty that was signed at COP15, cares about the oceans, a blue entrepreneur like me. His thinking, his use of technology is a whole leap ahead. So we've very much been in a consumption space up until Generation Z. There are some of my entrepreneurs in some of my 24 African nations I'm helping where in that country, 70% of the people are under 90, are under 20, and they're all Gen Alpha. And that's a massive influence.
Yeah.
So it's down to that. And I think that the reality of it is technology being the outcome is literally disappearing from our world.
Yeah.
And if what people are trying to do is replace what they do with technology, all AI technology, all they're doing is replacing their own tasks.
Yes.
And there's no human piece in that, no humanity in it. And they'll be working their way out of a job because these models are not to be relied on. And if you don't bring anything more than the machine, then why do we need you? So this adoption that's going on is about a task replacement thing.
Yep.
But the way some people are implementing AI, they're replacing themselves.
Yes.
And I've never understood why somebody doesn't get that, but they don't seem to. And so that's why I don't like the phrase an arms race, but that's why, because the sharing economy has always been about it's for profit. I need to make the biggest amount of cash.
Yeah.
And so, you know, in 2016, that's why I thought there has to be another way once deep tech becomes available to everybody to do that, that isn't just about cash. And that was why I founded the Empathy Economy, to say, what does that other model look like where it's not all about profit, it's profit for a purpose. And I find some of the marketeers that I work with in the Empathy Economy are very purpose-led and purposeful in their use of technology. And then many, like you say, the most perhaps that I come across, who are not that at all. It's about the money. And that's where I see the marketing world and the whole piece, PR, marketing, comms, dividing itself with this technology. Literally, if you're shopping around and you find, you know, your marketing studio or whatever replacing task for you, well, you need to find the one that's actually doing it from a purpose-led point of view, because they're going to give you future value.
Yes.
I mean, I see it really clearly. And I did the first debate on this in 2012. So it's taken a long time to come here, but I've watched it evolve, collected the data, understand it. And as always, marketing and the whole PR and the whole comms piece, the education awareness, all the things that we all do, the winners will be those that understand those differences in the cohorts and the values. Yeah. And they, quite frankly, most of them are not proficient in technology. It happens to be my superpower, but they're adopting something they don't really understand, replacing tasks, which ultimately means replacing people. with something that's actually flawed. So maybe they choose their own path, but I don't think they're the ones that survive.
Got it. Since you brought,
we are taking a break to thank our sponsors, AI Digitales. If you're fascinated by today's conversation about AI, you will love what AI Digital has to offer. From educational videos to engaging content, AI Digitales is on a mission to make technology of AI part of every child's learning. Check out AI Digitales on YouTube and learn how they are bringing AI to life for kids. Now, back to the episode.
Africa and the whole world into this, right? And it's your fault, doctor, not mine.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm owning that one. I'm owning it. Thank you for that, Ganesh. Right. And so, India. We all know that I'm doing this with India as well.
Yeah. So, there is an indie gaming developer, right, who developed his own game. And someone boasted online that they were downloading the particular game for as a pirated software, right? And the developer said something interesting. He said, access to culture should not be based on money, right? So now as AI become a daily staple in our cultures, right, across the board, across every country, yes, every religion, every set of parameters that you can look at as a human, at some point AI does become a culture, right?
It does.
So do you think that, again, coming back to the first question of centralization or decentralization, what do you think will happen? Because we are, almost all countries are slowly progressing towards extreme capitalism, right? Where, and it's almost becoming a part where it's almost like an authoritative capitalism, right?
It's an
authoritative capitalistic society. Do you think that for an end consumer, right, and especially those like the one who you said that, he's a 3-year-old businessman, right? Do you think that AI will be more accessible in terms of money, or it will be just accessible like internet?
So I think it's part of the deep tech mix. It's only one component part. Everybody's very excited about it because they've got their hands on it. But the rest that comes with it, the infrastructure that comes with it to connect us all and to utilize it, isn't here yet. Well, arguably it's in places like Ukraine, because that's what we're using to fight a war. But it's something that we will navigate it, I believe, once, Gen Z are that tipping point across 50% of the influence of the money, because although many of us are purpose-led, profit for purpose, empathy economy, we realize we work in exactly that extreme capitalist society you're talking about. What I've managed to evidence is that actually doing it our way in the empathy economy creates more money, creates GDP growth.
Yeah.
And so that part of the world is listening to that. And I suppose one of the ways in which we see how effective that is if I use the example of the sustainability agenda, how many countries have got on board to understand it's humans that are wrecking the planet, and it's being facilitated by companies. Which companies? And so one of the things from a marketing point of view, that brand loyalty has shifted over the last few years to how sustainable are you? Do we have the same values? And as Gen Alpha become also part of that cohort that questions, because the word I use for Gen Z always over this 25 years has been curious. They are a very curious generation, but they will take no nonsense from anybody. If you give them an answer that says, well, because I want a new aircraft, literally they walk away. And in fact, I know for many of the brands that I work with, one of the first reasons we ever meet is because Gen Z won't work for them.
Yep.
We don't like what we stand for. The brand doesn't have our values. We'll go do something else. We'll create our own. And that is not the end of it. That's the start of it. So I've always known with the research I've done, we would get to a day where the value question would be the key to it. And mm-hmm. because they're comfortable with this technology, they can ask it of the tech as well. So mm-hmm. if you've built something that means you've effectively created the emissions of Argentina in order mm-hmm. to deploy your AI, don't expect them to be using that. Don't expect yeah. them to do that. Mm-hmm. And so it's culture, as you say, Ganesh, you're absolutely right about that. But mm-hmm. there's values alongside of it. And yeah. one of the things I find the best thing about working in somewhere like India, where all the regions are so very different, there's a different vibe in the places, the mm-hmm. you know, the young people are looking at it from different perspectives, certainly true across the African nations I work in, that they are attaching culture and values together and creating something else. So yeah. I always say, I've just recently been honored to be given my Kiswahili name in South Africa with a drumming ceremony. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I'm most honored about is learning about that, because mm-hmm. that enriches my life. I obviously give and work with them to do what they do to turn this technology into something that perhaps, you know, addresses climate change, makes new value for communities and new type of work. Mm-hmm. Certainly around the agri-farming yeah. piece, the technology is helping them deal with the climate change or the weather changes they're seeing. And so I find that culture and values are becoming the sort of the spearhead of what happens next.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that particularly across somewhere like India, where, mm-hmm. you know, some communities have never had any of the things that yeah. we talk about, you know, they're, but in developing, they've skipped all the things that didn't work and caused a problem. And mm-hmm. they've gone to develop for their community what their community needs. Yeah. So that future for me, in what you're talking about, the culture piece, is actually hyper-local mm-hmm. because we, and I'm fascinated to see what these young people and these companies are creating, because they're creating new sort of instances of how this works, what this technology does, what it creates, but they're mm-hmm. bedding in culture, they're bedding in values. And quite frankly, you know, Gen Beta, Alpha and Gen Z can tell. They mm-hmm. can tell just by interacting with your technology whether yeah. it's got what I'm talking about or mm-hmm. it doesn't. Yeah. And so that for profit is just not their future. They don't believe in that. They have a moral view about, I'm co-creating in the world. I'm not trying mm-hmm. to consume it. And that's just got their it. Values.
Got it. You use a very interesting word, which was enrichment, right? Yeah. Enrichment of anything life. And Gen Z is one of those rare generation, I think, in human history that saw the pre-internet era and the post-internet era.
They are. Right? They are the cusp. They're the cusp generation, you're right.
And they, I think they were curious in terms of the same word, enrichment, right? Mm-hmm. Like, how will this help me?
Yes.
Now, the biggest buzzword in AI is automation. I don't know whether mm-hmm. you like it or not, but you know, that's the buzzword, right? Everybody is a prompt engineer or an automation expert. Do you think that we are arriving at a point when people have stopped asking themselves the same question? Is it enriching, you know, my journey in life, or, you know, even the journey of my organization, and they're just doing it because they just can do it?
Yeah, so the way I see that, because I've obviously got the data across the world, so I'm going to quote the data, 15% of people are asking that question and not caring what the answer is. 15% of people are not asking that question and don't mm-hmm. expect to,
yeah.
you know. And then the 70% in the middle, there's a big mixture going on. Mm-hmm. But the reality of it is, you know, I'll give you an instance. If you are... I'll talk about robotics, because AI is moving into robotics to be able to automate those jobs. And if what you can do is you can automate a job mm-hmm. that, you know, say you've got 1,000 steps a human has to do, when you've got something that complicated, a human's going to make a mistake, it's going to go off sick, it's going to have to work in a complex team. But actually, if you can get that human to select which components of that the machine should do and where mm-hmm. the checkpoints are, which we call advisory AI. So mm-hmm. do this and I'll check on you, because mm-hmm. I might change what you do next. Mm-hmm. Then actually that is genuinely what mm-hmm. people are navigating towards, because mm-hmm. some of the stuff we have to do as human as tasks is really quite boring. Whereas if you get the machine to do those ones where it's repetitive and you can be sure of the outcome, you can check it, which is what the advisory AI idea is. But actually, your throughput has changed, but you'll make the discoveries as a result of what you're doing. You know, 1,000 things reduced to this with 4 checkpoints and advisory points where a human's getting involved. Maybe in a lab or maybe in a manufacturing setting, then actually you can prove the whole for it all. And for myself as a high-level climate scientist, that is the most interesting thing, because at that point I can come in and say, and this and not that is good for the planet. So let's make sure the machine is being run on the right sort of facilities. It's actually been built in the right way, because it's not just energy we have to worry about, it's water. And so actually you can start to configure the environment we all work in for all of our benefits. If you didn't automate it, you would never be able to get to that, because it's in a human's gifts to know the workflow and the value chain. But put a machine to work, then you can step back. And some people worry about what we're talking about all the time. And they say this to me and I say, do you know how boring some of the jobs we do are? And do you know what happens when a machine, I know you do, Ganesh, good point. When a machine does the boring bits, we do the bits that a machine can never do, or at least not in the next few years, because this is about freeing us up to do that critical thinking, that systems thinking that actually says, but what does this all mean? And what's the next evolution? So most of what this technology is doing is evolving the tasks to evolve the sort of the discipline. And actually the stuff I do every day is fascinating, because machines do most of what I used to do, because I eat my own dog food, and you know, why wouldn't we do that automation? Because that's, you know, and then we get to do fascinating stuff. So rather than be something you need to worry about, the quicker you do it, the more you have in front of you to be able to improve it. And, you know, in cases of labs and things, that's saving people's lives, because the advisory AI is checking in with the human, but doing the, you know, the heavy lift and shift, freeing us up to use our minds, which is, of course, our differentiator.
Got it. But if you look at the mass media of AI, right, just a mass usage of AI, it almost seems it's exactly reverse of what you're saying. Right, because for example, if someone wants to run a Facebook ad, right, they would go to AI to create the image and write all the creatives, but they would do the posting, right, like uploading of the image and, you know, budgeting and scheduling by themselves. So it's almost as if we, you know, we are slowly leaping or depending on AI for, you know, the creative jobs, and we are doing the more, you know, more boring job. Right.
And I think this is a good point on where there's some misunderstanding. If that's what you're doing, then a client is not going to pay for you to do that work, because what you've removed is not just the task, but the thinking. So, you know, what you end up with is something completely homogenous. And any client that knows about AI can spot that as what's
done. But doctor, the problem is, the issue is,
go on.
If you talk to agencies, they say my you know, customer prefers if I go with AI.
Well, maybe for now. Yeah. What happens when their competitor does what I'm talking about? All their ads land flat. Yeah. You know, we have 40% of the world's economic spend in Gen Z's hands, and they look at that and think, well, we know how you've done that, and we know what that is. And
I almost feel like
competitor.
It's already happening.
I think it is happening.
It has started to happen.
Yeah,
because there was a study by a very small Instagrammer, right, who tested the same logic. And he said people absolutely hated, you know, the AI-generated stuff, because they're able to recognize few words, right?
Yeah.
Very famously, OpenAI uses the word elevated a lot.
Yes. No such thing, as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, they're literally just reacting to what they've been fed. Mm-hmm. And actually, you know, you put the same input in, you're going to get the same output out for most of it. So client, if they've got four pitches they're going to have and mm-hmm. three companies have done what you're talking about, they'll all look the same.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, quite frankly, you know, maybe your client that signs off on the budget isn't a Gen Z, but there'll be a Gen Z in the room who will say to the client, it's mm-hmm. number four we go with because that's original input, original content. And that's mm-hmm. going to be, I mean, you only have to look at, I'm not a great fan for various reasons of TikTok. Original mm-hmm. content, just in a bite-sized pieces, mm-hmm. is what's fueling that platform. Because people want to see something that's mm-hmm. creative.
Yeah.
And if you're down the track of not doing that, how mm-hmm. long will you have a business? How many clients will you lose? Mm-hmm. And just while this all sort of unfolds, I think, you know, there is some that are making it on the back of that. But mm-hmm. if what you're doing with AI is removing your own creativity, you're doing exactly the wrong thing. Your own creativity is the differentiator. The mm-hmm. model can't do that.
Yeah. There is a surprising trend right now in social media that if you scroll like 100 TikToks or reels, you will find deliberate spelling mistakes in at least 2 to 3.
Yeah,
and people are doing that wantingly because there is an assumption from the creator's perspective that he thinks that everything is too perfect, right? Everything is auto-corrected or everything is AI-generated. So they are deliberately putting these spelling mistakes.
Which for me as a dyslexic thinker, that's my world anyway, you know, because I mean, I would just do that and I would think it looked right. But the reality of it is it gets old very quickly. If mm-hmm. that's the way you're doing your creative generation, the patterns form, because essentially mm-hmm. that's what these models do. They're patterns and they will repeat. And mm-hmm. You know how online audiences are, you don't need to do anything controversial. You can get trolled. But what happens when somebody spots that and guarantee mm-hmm. Gen Z would or a Gen Alpha would, and they call you out about it?
Yeah.
That's your brand. That's your reputation gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The latest example is this, you know, the example of strawberry, right? Like how many R's are there in strawberry?
right.
Yeah. And somebody said they fixed strawberry, but they have not yet fixed the raspberry.
Yeah. But that's probably, as a dyslexic, not a word I misspell. But I'm with you. But the reality of it is we have very savvy consumers mm-hmm. on the end of this output.
Yeah.
And don't, you know, unlike the millennials who will shout about it, mm-hmm. there's a very pithy remark comes from a Gen Z or a Gen Alpha that literally just like zinger, you know, boom, mic drop. And that's not what you want against your brand. And so if you're in this space where you're going, mm-hmm. well, that's, you know, I'm losing some pitches, Dr. Jackie, so what do I do? Make that point. Make mm-hmm. the point that you've understood the human in the loop. You've mm-hmm. understood that this technology is not an outcome. It's an enabler. Yeah. And so for mm-hmm. your brand, I've put mm-hmm. my humans to work in the best places mm-hmm. and I've reduced your cost to use the machines. And just own it.
Yeah,
and clients may not buy it the first time, but it's mm-hmm. not going to be long before what I've just said becomes a norm. Mm-hmm. And what I found is I've done contract negotiations for clients where when you sign the contract, there's mm-hmm. clauses in there about what you haven't done with the technology that you're going to use. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe you haven't seen that yet, but the UK has made a major change, a legislative change. Mm-hmm. That will allow that to take place. And that is everything the UK government does from the 28th of October 2024 allows what I've just said to happen. So mm-hmm. you have to say what you've done.
Yeah.
And you have to talk about the social value of what you've done. Now, that's mm-hmm. like, well, that's the UK government. What does that matter to me? But that's 232 billion annual spend sterling. Mm-hmm. And so if the government can take that route, mm-hmm. I can guarantee you our businesses are looking at it like that. Mm-hmm. And in the end, what's your differentiator if all you're doing is using technology?
Well, Doctor, to that particular point, mm-hmm. I mean, obviously there are countries who are ready to play dirty on that front, isn't it? Right?
Yeah, like, absolutely. Ganesh, there'll always become countries that will do that. AI makes no difference to that.
Yeah, I mean, AI is just a new trend.
A new tool, the latest tool.
Yeah, the latest tool that's, and let me ask you a question that would delight my, you know, trader listeners who do, you know, stock trading. Do you think there is an AI bubble?
Yes, I know there's an AI bubble because you're all dealing with AI that the rest of us don't deal with anymore. We put that down a long time ago, and the purpose it's being put to, it really is suspect. And so there's an AI bubble for the investment, for definite. But those of us that are not building that, we're still managing to get all of that invested. But there one thing that is in all of this for you know, the people in your audience is it's a reality. Understand your position in it and make sure you're clear to clients what you're doing. Find your differentiator because you're not just, you know, when the emperor's new clothes become unveiled as not actually there, you're on the right side of history. But then say to whatever you're doing, position yourself such that you are clear about where you are with this technology. Because what you've got your hands on at the moment is 25 years old or something like that. Yeah. What's to come is something very different. So you can build on what we're talking about. But just at the moment, everybody can do what we're talking about with these, these reactive machines that's what they're called. But as we move up the sort of evolution of AI, you're not going to be able to do that.
Yeah.
And so get your soul straightened out now. Be very clear about what you're doing. Make that your differentiator. You're positioned for the future if you do that.
Got it. Let me ask you a tad bit of a pessimistic question. Do you think elites of certain class of people absolutely hate the idea of decentralization of AI and access to AI to general public?
No, I don't think so, because they're making money out of it. So yeah, but the moment,
it would give them
an
edge, right?
Well, what sort of edge can a reactive machine give you? I have doubts it gives you any edge.
Yeah, but it gives you a spark, at least, you know.
But why
for
is that?
Somebody
you're talking
who doesn't
about being
have
a threat.
Anything.
You're talking about that being a threat somehow.
Exactly, that's what I'm getting at, because a lot of people feel, because most people see any relation as a master-slave kind of relation.
Okay.
And there is this whole community of people who think like AI is going to be the master and we are going to be absolutely the slaves, because there is something called a social point system I came across that they were discussing about and how China has already implemented it. So there is this fear, right? And that's why I brought this point up of, you know, few people being pissed off about that.
Well, I think the reality of it is that is a reality and has been a reality for some time now. And, you know, at the end of the day, is this technology, what's its purpose? If its purpose is part of a surveillance agenda, then of course that's what you've got.
Yeah.
But are you looking at this strategically as a capability that you can grow your country, you can develop new skills, you can grow new industries? I mean, who out of many of you have ever heard of a prompt engineer 2 years ago or 2.5 years ago?
Not even 6 months ago.
Right. Because this has been my world for 25 years. I don't necessarily get the timing right. But but the reality of it is, this is the infancy. And that curiosity of Gen Z is your biggest help, because if you stay curious about what's going on, what's to come is really, really exciting. And you need to stay ahead of where people are, but ideally a little bit further ahead of that, so you can plan. You know, it's almost Q4 of 2024. How on earth did we get to here? And so what are you going to do in Q4 that you might do differently now you know more about this, now we've had this conversation? What might 2025 look like if you look at this more strategically? Most people are using this tactically to make the quick, you know, the quick cash. But that's not actually that's not the thing it's best at. The thing it's best at is getting rid of the boring things, creating new sort of avenues or directions for your business or your life or your career. And there are skills in here that will set you forward for the industrial Internet of Things when actually you're not in the loop because you're planned out of the loop. What will you do then? How will it look like that? But ultimately, there is enough online now where it's purpose-led find mm-hmm. your community there, which is what we do. We do a workshop in the empathy economy called Risk Winning, and we talk about how you position yourself for that world when mm-hmm. you know all of this noise has gone away, and how mm-hmm. have you used it to drive a purpose? Because at the end of the day, this technology mm-hmm. can be used to create the world we want to live in.
Mm-hmm.
But only if you're engaged with it, only if you're thinking about it, only if you're differentiating yourself, mm-hmm. positioning yourself. This is, if somebody listening to this doesn't want to do this, I'm very sorry, mm-hmm. it's done now. The horse mm-hmm. has escaped from the stable. It's never going back. So what does that mean for you? You know, mm-hmm. that's the reality yeah. of it.
Got it. The CEO of NVIDIA
mm-hmm.
put out a statement. He said where, don't learn to code, but understand how things work, because that is far more important than learning coding, because that boring part is going to be automated anyways in the future.
It's not actually, but for most of you it is. That's mm-hmm. true.
Right.
And I have to partly agree with that.
So my question is, right, because a lot of young people are listening to this,
mm-hmm.
What would you say to them that would help them or set them in a career and they would have a USP when it comes to competition?
And it's a really great question. I do disagree with that statement from NVIDIA, because none of that is true. I mean, I do walk into board meetings where they say, we want an AI. And my immediate response to that is, no, you don't.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't know why you want an AI, so you definitely don't need one. So what is your purpose, and how could this technology support you? And mm-hmm. in a business world, the differentiator with AI and some of the other industrial Internet of Things technologies is we're having a debate here about capability building. That's not mm-hmm. the future.
Yeah.
The actual capacity building is the future. So how do you scale what you've done? Because mm-hmm. if you're whatever you're doing in your world, you're wanting to reach out to clients and you know, partners and
mm-hmm.
possibly solve some very big problems where you live or another part of the world. This is all about what would you do if you knew that what you had your hands on now was mm-hmm. the answer to something huge? Like,
yeah.
you know, I've just done a piece of work in Tanzania about the fishing industry, which mm-hmm. is, you know, bringing some light to that, bringing some data to that, being able to look at what that means. The whole communities now on the east of Africa that are, you know, using technology to understand and mm-hmm. how will we change what we do, which part of it is the human bit, which part is the machine bit of it. So listen from a career point of view. Partly find the people that are talking about the future as we are today, you know, so stick close to Ganesh, that's where you need to be. But also read about the things that are rubbish. Mm-hmm. So most of the things, you know, that I've talked about they're just hype. The whole hype yeah. cycle is what we're going through here. And that's yeah. why I say it's a bubble, and that's why it won't pervade. But it'll move on, essentially. This mm-hmm. is your reality for your career now. This is yeah. the world it'll be. So it plays mm-hmm. out in this space. What I would say you do is find the sources of information and that future focus that you can get on a regular basis to mm-hmm. start to understand what's actually going on beyond the noise.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll give you a clue. If you're reading it on Twitter, it's usually not. If you're seeing it on TikTok, it's usually not. Often places like LinkedIn, because it's very business focused, will talk about your sector in this context. I'm going to give Ganesh my contact details so you can pick up my work and you can challenge me and ask me questions and what have you. So yeah. start to develop your own network around this. People mm-hmm. that are, I mean, we've got many in the empathy economy that collaborate with competitors because they all have understood in their sector, this mm-hmm. is changing for them all and nobody's got the answer. But, yeah. And if you're not sure, if you don't pay for the information, it's probably part propaganda, part mm-hmm. some sort of sales technique. But start to take... I advise time blockings every day. Mm-hmm. If you could take 30 minutes of every day, block it out. If you're a lark, as I am, you do it first thing in the morning. If yeah. you're an owl and you're a late night person, you do it at the end of the day. But block out yourself 30 minutes every day, or 15 if you want to start. And literally, the other thing that I'd start some people off is 3 tracks on your favorite music app. During that time, stick music in your ear, start to consume things. Literally catch things as they go and start to consume them. Make some notes. Most of us that work in responsible AI are trying to get our ideas out there for you to be able to find what it is for you. And if you're purpose-driven, that's specifically what I do. And the reality of it is the careers you're going to be in don't exist today. They might exist in our companies, but they won't exist for you. So essentially, I always talk about it as risk winning. What career would you invent? Somebody actually made me a magic wand. So in some of my speeches, I wave this magic wand and say, okay, I've made that career option available to you. What will it be? And you've got to understand, you know, where you need to collaborate. We don't all have all the talents. And so create sort of connections and start to consume this stuff. And I would say LinkedIn as a start point, because there's lots of great stuff on there. And then reach out to people, ask questions. But it's literally, I've just done a thought leadership piece for Huawei, the technology company. And the sort of title of the piece is The Future's So Bright, You'll Need Sunglasses. And that's actually what I think. But it does require investment of time to be able to say, and which bit of it would be for me? You know, and I mentor people on this because they struggle with it, and we work it out together and stuff like that. But surround yourself with people who are equally curious. Remember that word, curious, and just allocate days. Because if you've got 2.5 hours every week in a year, by the end of 2025, you'll know. I guarantee you.
Got it. So consume knowledge like nobody else does.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. And be curious. Stay curious. Uh-huh. That is what Gen Z do all the time. Nothing's and basically, if I didn't do the right stuff, they'd ostracize me as well as being useless. So I stay close to them. I consult with them. I ask them ideas. I get them to challenge me and what have you. But underpinning it all, that curiosity is the key to it.
Got it. So you talk a lot about empathy economy, right? Where do you find balance between quick cash and a long-term dream?
Okay, that's a really good question. When I set out to say in December 2016, this is not going to work and we're going to create that dystopian future and worse, we might sleepwalk it. So, but then the next question I had was, well, what will we do instead? And I took the whole of 2017 off and did a whole pile of curiosity things, the entire year, to say, what would it look like? What does that mean? And I think the reality of in the empathy economy, what I've learned from it being me standing in front of 220 people in London to over 10 million people is the answers are, you know, those good ideas and those answers and people that want to do that, they're absolutely everywhere. But it really does come down to who do you associate with and what leadership model you're following. And so essentially the resources I put out to the empathy economy entrepreneurs were around the business model is profit for purpose. And that was a tricky one in some places like Africa and India, because there's an NGO set up there that say, well, I don't really want to do money. I would say to them, that's great. All you're ever going to build is capability. You're never going to scale. Money is not evil in the same way that the web's not evil, the same way that AI doesn't have to be evil. It's actually a tool. So how will you use it? If you want to scale anything, it's going to take money. And so money's not the evil piece. It's the resource like anything else, like an AI model. It's a resource. How do you use it is the outcome on that. And so that's why I say about that curiosity. It's interesting because when you get the Gen Alpha entrepreneurs in the empathy economy, they're like, this Gen Z lot, they've just negotiated with millennials and Gen X. None of that for us. We're not negotiating with anybody. They literally set their purpose. They know what they're doing. And they just get on and do it. And the first thing you know about it is got delivered. So they're a very different cohort. And my youngest entrepreneur became a multimillionaire. He was 11. Because he knew what what he wanted to do, and he literally relentlessly did that until he'd got what he needed. And it's very interesting because he sold that company to a toy entrepreneur, a toy chain that you would know if I was to mention it. And the CEO of the toy chain, once it was all signed, which of course was by his mum because he was 11 and he couldn't sign it, the owner of the toy company said, "Why did you do this?" And he said, "Why did I do this? I'm 11. You own this massive toy company. Why haven't you done it?" So that's my illustration of the difference between Gen Z and Gen Alpha. It's like, I just set out to do it. And then in pandemic, I'll give you just a quick Gen Beta piece. I support many mums who have children, raised children or raising children like me who are neurodiverse. I'm also visually disabled. And that is, you know, it's a neurotypical world, and to see our skills and our talents put to work is more of an equity agenda. It's beyond diversity and inclusion. It's about every, you know, leave no one behind. And so I supported lots of mums during pandemic, and there was a theme emerged when they were raising Gen Alpha, Gen Beta, because they got to a watershed moment that said, okay, you're not very good at this, are you? And so, you know, my best example is three boys, 6 years old. Mom and dad came down one morning in lockdown, found two pads and two pencils. And they, the first thing that was said to them is, you've not had breakfast, and until you've done this, you're not getting it. You need to write down all the things we've discussed now, and we're going to make a new plan for our family. And I said to the mum when she was telling me about it, I said, you didn't stop them, did you? You did do what they asked. She said, I did. Well, she said, it's genius. She said, our family runs. It's genius. And it's like, some people, there's a clarity with Gen Beta where they look at it and go, why would you do this? This makes no sense. Whereas, you know, lots of us who haven't been in that immersive world like Gen Z, we navigate it because that's what everybody does, don't they? No, they don't. And so think, be more curious, get some clarity, define your purpose. And you'll find when you hit that, I've just done a executive coaching session with one of my entrepreneurs who's literally rocking on this one. And she said to me, you know, when you actually find all those things, the universe won't let you stop. So she's got everything coming at her now because she's literally nailed those three things. And now the whole world's opened up. And and there is that for all of us. And this technology is your enabler, but not in the way that, you know, some of the things that Ganesha said are right, but that's not the pathway. And so I'm excited to learn, you know, you're listening to this session, I'm excited to learn from Ganesha in the future. Guess what happened? Somebody did this, somebody did that. Somebody's inspired to check that out. I know that listening to this, you're connected into that inspiration. And all it is legwork, 30 minutes every day, and then you're there. Oh, it's a bit more than that. But that's your start point, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it'd get you somewhere.
It will. And it'll get you that clarity, which is what gets you towards that. Using that curiosity gets you that clarity and start to unlock your purpose.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a Gen Z, so I have a very strict principle when it comes to technology, right? I don't know where I read it, but I read somewhere that be curious, not judgmental. Right. So when you come across something that is like, I would say, challenges your sort of beliefs or whatever it is, right, you have to be curious.
You do, because otherwise you'll be critical and be judgmental. And you're making a choice between curiosity and criticism.
Yeah.
Now, you know, people have done what they're doing. They've got to that level of thinking. The very least you can do for anybody is what you would want yourself, which for somebody to be curious about why you've said that, want to know more, because why would any of us want to put that judgment out there? Because we all know about karma. It comes back in the bucket load. So why would we do that? But but some people say, well, how do you not do that? Stay curious, because otherwise, if you know you've got that judgmental thing, which is really fear-based, I mean, it's nothing more than fear, then you'll be critical and therefore judge. Whereas actually, if you're curious, you get a completely different outcome. And usually you make a friend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Because I come from a non-technical background. I studied money. I studied commerce. I'm a digital marketer.
Of course.
Right. And if I was judgmental from day one, I was like, yeah, this is not going to work. Right. I would have been balancing books by now. So, yeah. Right. So, you know, because I don't know how to code. And I see this whole, and this is something that I always frustrate. I've always been frustrated with, you know, people that people go into technicalities, right? For example, is code-based website good or no code website, you know, is good. I'm like, it's irrelevant.
It is irrelevant.
Right. Whatever floats your boat, you know, go
but
for
at the
it.
End of the day, does it bring you closer to your audience? Does
exactly.
it help people engage? Can you communicate mm-hmm. your message?
Yeah.
And, you know, I had this meeting yesterday with a new initiative I've got that I'm putting forward for in the empathy economy. And the developers are like, are we using the templates for this? It's like, well, we are because everybody that's going to consume these websites mm-hmm. hates technology. So let's demystify it. Let's make it simple. Let's make them like technology. And like, oh, Jackie, now you've gone too far. They'll never love technology. Well, they will if you make it easy and it allows them to support them to connect with their communities. They'll love the technology. But we know it's technologists. We often make it complicated because there's that, you know, we're the wizards and it's the magic. No, it's not.
Yeah. And also there is this whole, I don't know, fraternity of people who want to gatekeep technology for no reason, which doesn't make sense. Like, you know, one more person learning a programming language doesn't make you less skilled.
No, and I think the reality of it is those are the people that think there's a limit to the pie that's available.
Yep.
No, there's not. There's a limit to the thinking that's being used. But if you know, do you believe in a world of abundance that you are here and you've got talent?
Exactly.
And if you do, that's what you'll find. No, it's that age-old Taoism story about, you know, somebody leaving where they are because it's so awful and they meet a man and say, you know, I'm going to this place. What's it like? And he said, what's it like where you came from? Oh, it was awful. People are horrible. It's just like that. At the end of the day, we're the sort of conduit, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, why would you not choose abundance?
Yeah.
Why would you not?
I heard Joe Rogan say once that the only difference between people who are successful and people who are jealous is the switch of mindset from you know, scarcity to abundance.
Yeah, and I would add one more thing in there, which is success comes before work only in the dictionary.
Mm-hmm.
Work ethic alongside that is exactly it. So that's why I'm saying every day form that habit of researching, you know, what things interest you, what's going on, find out about it, be curious, because you've got to put the work in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I find that lots of people are like, wow, it's like I've put 40 years work into this. I've got 29 years of research into this, but I'm curious about it. And it's, you know, it's defined what my role in the world. And I love that. You know, I get sort of out of bed each morning with these young people that are just doing things that nobody expects. And I'm like, wow, how can I help them do that? And, you know, at the end of the day, it's about if we're going to spend our time at work, let's spend it on something that's meaningful. I said yesterday to some investors that I was working with, I said, you know, the best thing in the world is what I get to do. I get to only work with people that share my values, that are lovely people.
Mm-hmm.
And so if that was your work, you know, why wouldn't
Imagine.
You do that? Yeah, exactly. And the question is, it can be your work. You just need to choose that.
Mm-hmm.
And get curious and embrace what's going on because it's fascinating. And this code, no code, it won't matter.
Yeah.
It's not how it's going to work in the future. But
right.
find where your place is. What do your talents unlock in the world? You are an individual with talents that are not repeated anywhere.
Yep. Yeah, and also trust yourself a little bit, right? Maybe have faith.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't believe that all of it's sort of predestined. I think there's points at which you can reconfigure it, but they're usually accompanied by making that choice and doing some work. You know.
Yep.
And so, you know, if you do that, then And really, you just, when you do that, what happens is another picture unfolds, because mm-hmm. you effectively unlock a new sort of evolution of thinking. Mm-hmm. In the empathy economy, we call it the infinity mindset.
Mm-hmm.
You never get to the place where there's no destination. It's just it opens up more and more and more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, this has been a very interesting mm-hmm. and deep yet, curious kind of conversation, I would say. Thank you so much for that. And unfortunately, right, I did not give you a proper introduction.
Right. Okay, I can do that now and you can cut it in if you'd like.
No cuts.
Okay, then. I don't need it. I mean,
you don't need it. Because
I don't need it.
But yeah.
If you wanted to do it, I'm happy to do it. I think I want to leave everybody with one thought, though. With great tech, which AI is, comes great responsibility.
Marvelous.
Not just for those of us that build it, but for everybody that uses it too. Mm-hmm. Why? It will change our world forever.
Yeah.
So that's why responsible AI. And if you mm-hmm. if you remember nothing else about this podcast, mm-hmm. responsible AI, and make sure you ask that question, be curious, is this responsible AI? Does it use the 10 principles? And if people look blankly at you, it doesn't, and it's not.
Yeah. Yes. It's that simple.
It is.
I mean, thank you for being here. It was an honor to have you, and Doctor's LinkedIn and her website link will be in the description. So just go there and check her out and just talk to her, because she looks like a person whom you can approach and just talk to like a regular human being. Thank you so much. And any final words for, my people?
I think the future is bright. You will need sunglasses. And really, if you find people telling you different, don't listen to those people, because that's not actually right. You know, we mm-hmm. all know not to share a dream with somebody who's never achieved a dream. And so, be curious with people. But when you get that response, know that they're not your people. And mm-hmm. and there are so many of us across the world that are, not just in the empathy economy, but elsewhere, that are looking at this responsible technology future. And I'd love you to be part of it, because it needs us all. You know, this is our future we're designing together. The culture piece that Ganesh said is a very critical component of that, where we leverage that culture to make that change, to build the world we all want to live in.
Got it. That's a very positive message. And with that, guys, this is the end of the episode. Stay curious. Don't be judgmental. Maybe it will take you somewhere in your life. Nobody knows.
Do tell us. Do tell mm-hmm. us where it took you. Ganesh wants to know, and so do I.
Yes, definitely. We are interested in micro journeys of people rather than the whole journey of a civilization. And until next episode, take care and bye-bye.